Hello, hello.
Welcome to the Black Experience.
Oh my gosh. It's always been a Black experience. We've been Black this entire time.
Yo, can I tell you something funny? So we hired a new employee this, I guess, 2 weeks ago, but she spent a week in the office and, you know, we're just getting to know each other. And she's like, I hate to say it, but this is the Blackest company I've ever worked for. That took as such a compliment.
I was going to say, that's a great compliment.
Yeah, she went on to say, like, I don't have to code switch here. I could be myself.
I was about to say, because let's add that she's Black. Because if that came from a non-Black person, it might be an issue, a compliance.
Well, it depends on the context.
Yeah, you know.
Because not everybody at Momentum is Black, so.
Correct. Know. That's why we need to note that she is. So what she's saying is that this experience feels like home. It's the homiest experience she's had thus far in the financial services industry.
Yeah. And she loves it. You know what I mean? Like, just the idea that you can be yourself in a professional environment where people are working hard all around you. And it's like, you know, sometimes Black folks, like we ourselves would look at that as a negative. Oh, he's trying to say that y'all ghetto. Like, nah, it's just a Black thing. It's Black excellence is how I took it.
Yeah. And we get to embrace all of who you are. Right. I feel like to her point, like not even just code switching, like a lot of times you don't share all your resources with your employer because you don't feel like culturally they're valued. You know what I mean? So if we found out, for instance, if we found out she could make pound cake, you know, that would be welcomed here.
Yeah, you know? I mean, and real talk, that same night, I invited her back to the crib. No, she came over to the crib for dinner and we ate collard greens together.
Would you not do that if she was Black?
Oh, no, she would be eating collard greens regardless. So,
okay. Yeah. Got it. Well, I don't know how we got here, but welcome to
Happy Black History Month, y'all.
Happy Black History Month. Happy to be Black. I really am. I hope no one takes this the wrong way, right? But like, and I want to believe that every race and culture feels this way.
Yeah, about themselves all want to be Black. Okay.
No, about themselves. Like when I am there are plenty of times I'm out and I'm just like, I am so happy to be Black. Yeah. Not that like there's anything wrong with anybody else. And again, I think every culture and race embraces their personal experience and like wouldn't change who they are for anybody. And that's really all it is. Like just an adoration for my personal experience and cultural exposures. I can tell you a funny story. Alan swears that like I do too much small talk, but whatever. So last night, whatever.
People like it.
And that's bringing myself to work, bringing my full self. How about that?
Small talking. Even though in reality, you're not a small talker.
Like,
the irony of this whole thing.
Ever approach me with small talk either because I am really bad at it. And I'll walk
small
off.
Talk, it makes you uncomfortable. Like it legit makes you uncomfortable.
Very much so. But when it's just us and a microphone.
Me?
Alan. Oh, God. Oh my God.
Small talk king.
Thank you. So
let's not
I'm out.
Get to the business.
Last night, my brother invites me and my fiance out for a drink. And so we go to like a local spot that's literally like right in our neighborhood. And every Thursday night, and I didn't know this, and I didn't know if my brother knew this when he picked the spot, but and just for people who've been listening for a long time, this is y'all have heard me talk about my family. This is a brother in love, not in a relation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I knew this, that every Thursday, this spot has salsa lessons. So I'm like, are you inviting us to salsa lessons?
Okay.
He didn't know that, right? So it's like a Latin food hall. And so there's all these different Latin food vendors and Latin bars. And then in the middle, they do salsa dancing. So he's like, nah, I didn't know. I'm like, wait, we about to watch these people salsa dance. Literally every Thursday, it's easily 40 people in here. Packs the place out. And it's just on full display. And, It's a lot of fun.
Sounds
watching.
Caliente.
Very much so. It's
caliente.
A lot of fun watching others with different cultural upbringings.
Oh.
Maneuver. through salsa dancing.
You're saying that kindly, you're kindly saying that some ethnicities struggle with the coordination of
correct.
The feet.
Correct.
Okay, I got you.
And just finding the rhythm. I learned how they teach rhythm. And I said, thank God I never had to go through that.
Yeah, they tell you to beat. Like I've taken.
They tell you
lessons.
The number. No, they tell you to. It's like.
Yeah, no, it's a number. It's
one in five.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm like, oh, that's a great way to get you to the beat. One in five. And it was like one in three. That threw some people. But it was very interesting.
Somebody took their calculator out.
Listen, I will say this. Everybody had a great time, but it was really, it resonated with me further. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the culture that I come from.
Yeah.
Because we don't use one or five.
Yeah.
But
But happy Black History Month. And
happy Black History Month.
This is, I took it as a personal challenge last week. Tiffany said that last year, I personally did such an amazing job.
I never said that.
And anybody
who knows
Black
me knows
History
I've never
Month.
Said that. It's been the last 2 years. I've never said
you
that.
You said I killed it. You said I
absolutely not.
Should be commended for how well I represented us.
The last 2 years, you've decided to bring a Black fact every week during Black History Month. And so I said, I expect you to do the same thing this year and don't try to reuse any of your facts from last year. And Alan took that as a challenge to not just bring a Black fact.
Nope. Can't just stop there.
No, he's bringing a whole Black case study today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The whole show is going to be a variety of Black facts about one Black man in particular. Who we can all learn from. Not Cat Williams. We did that already.
We did. Big shout out to Cat.
Not Cat Williams. But someone who can teach us a lot about wealth, business, entrepreneurship, and perseverance.
Absolutely. And our title of our show today is, Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And this is the Byron Allen edition.
Now just so we're clear, that is the name of a book, minus the Byron Allen edition. That is the name of a book that's had a really profound impact on Allen's life.
Yeah, this is a book that was written in the 90s by my hero, Reginald Lewis. And Reginald Lewis, for those of you who remember or go back and listen to an old show, we talked a lot about Reginald Lewis a year ago. He was a corporate lawyer who was one of the first, I think the first Black person to do a $1 billion buyout of a company when he bought Beatrice Foods in the 90s. And he's one of my heroes. Like he's one of the people, I read this book when I was in college and it just made me realize like there is so much more that we can do versus what we're told that we can do. Like this is a Black man who just has an incredible story. He's an HBCU grad. I'm talking about Reginald Lewis. And he went on to buy a $1 billion company. And so when we think about it, like in the notion of the book, Why Should the White Guys Have All the Fun? Is just the idea that like, yo, if you give us a chance, we can bust the whole thing open. Like we can do everything that anybody else can do. And that's
everybody
what he decided
that.
To go out and do. And really like, that's what we're out here doing. Like we are Black folks out here thriving in our own financial services company that we own ourselves.
Yeah. And I think that everybody now knows, if they didn't know before, I'd like to think, honestly, I think everybody has always known that we can do everything that everybody else can do and more. And I think that for some people, they didn't like that or they didn't want us to embrace that. And what I love about Reginald F. Lewis is that he was representation of that for anyone who wanted to act like they didn't know or anyone who might have been unsure or was starting to believe the narrative.
And that's exactly right. Because a lot of times we don't know what we can be until we see someone that looks like us doing that thing.
Facts.
And for me, that was Reginald Lewis to say, hey, I could be a Wall Street titan. Like I can start my own things. I could buy businesses. And that's what I'm out here doing. And Tiffany, you were doing it too. You know, and it's because of the fact that folks have done it before us. And so the reason why we're talking about Byron Allen is I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but on the front cover of my Wall Street Journal, and I still get the physical paper, by the way.
Yes,
I'm
you
old
do.
School. I keep it all the way
and
real.
Yes, because he stacks them in the corner of the office and they end up piling up on his desk regularly.
And I read them. I read all of them. Thank
he
you
He does
very
read
much.
Them. What happens after that, though, is a little sketchy.
Yeah. So on the cover of the Wall Street Journal this week was an article about Byron Allen's media company making a bid to buy Paramount Global. And Paramount Global is like a movie studio. They own BET, they own VH1. It's a major, major company. And he made an offer to buy the company for $14.3 billion.
Come on, Byron.
And I'm like, yo, jokers don't even know Byron Allen's name. Like, there's somebody out here who's like, oh, that corny guy? Like that?
Facts. He does look a little corny. He gives corny. I'm not going to hold
you. Listen, I ain't say he's the coolest cat on earth. I'm saying, like, here is a Black man that a lot of folks don't know about out here about to do a $14.3 billion media deal.
And oftentimes I feel like when people talk about billionaire entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs doing billion-dollar deals, they are rarely ever Black men. And when they mm-hmm. are, and this is no shade, they're associated with the entertainment industry, right? Yeah. In that they're a rapper mm-hmm. or a musician or even an athlete at times. And yes, yeah. we love them. We love those. We love all of those strides. That is the culture for sure. But we need to show and talk about the representation that lives outside of that. You don't have to come from a specific type of industry or have a specific type of talent or be a public celebrity personality in order to be able to do these type of deals. And that's what we want to talk about. Just everything that we're out here doing as a people.
Yeah. We're not looking to glorify this man. We think he's got a great story. We're just trying to learn from him. Just like we learned about Cat Williams, just like we're going to do shows about, we'll probably do a show about a rapper or two.
Oh, I'll lead that show for sure. Yeah, matter of fact, Alan, if you want to call out that day, you can. I got it.
We did when we were on Sirius XM, we did the economics of Jay-Z. Mm. That might be one we want to run back.
We did.
And his story has just gotten better and better since then.
And better and better. We might work on that. Maybe that'll be how we end Black History Month. Who knows? Ooh. But who is Byron Allen, right? Like, we're talking about the billion-dollar deal, but like, where did he start? Similar to someone else we highlighted recently, he started out in 1993 as a comedian.
Now, who do we? Oh, Cat Williams.
Yes.
I'm like, wait, who did we highlight recently? Yeah.
He
was a comedian. So, like, you talked earlier about entertainers. Like, yeah, my man was an entertainer. And
Was he entertaining? Is the question.
Yeah. I don't suspect he was killing. Like, I'm sure he was okay.
Have you ever seen him on Comic View? Was he ever on Comic View?
I mean, he about to own Comic View.
Facts.
No, but like he's got like this great story. So Byron Allen was born in Detroit. His parents got divorced. And in 1968, he moved with his mom to Los Angeles. And his mom broke into the entertainment industry initially as an intern and then ultimately as a publicist for NBC Studios. And so while he's going to work with his mom, just literally being tagged along to work with his mom, he met Johnny Carson. He used to actually sit at Johnny Carson's desk. Do you remember Johnny Carson? Are you of that age? Were you remember The Tonight Show?
I hate to say this, like I remember hearing about it. Like I don't remember. Like I don't think I watched it, but like I know it was a thing. I know Johnny Carson was a thing. Like I've seen like clips.
It was late. It was late. Like you probably were being.
I'm Arsenio Hall. Yeah, I'm Arsenio Hall.
I think they were concurrent, but like this is kind of like pre. Arsenio, okay. For sure. So Johnny Carson was this big. Johnny Carson was basically like the host before Jay Leno.
Got you.
And so if you could think about how big Jay Leno is, like Carson was actually funnier, bigger than Jay Leno. Older guy. Carson was funny. He was smooth. So he met Johnny Carson when he was a teenager. And Johnny Carson encouraged him to make his own stand-up comedy routine. And at age 14, he made up a routine. He started performing at amateur nights. And he got discovered by J.J. Evans himself, Jimmy Walker.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
I have to ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you think Johnny Carson like really thought he was funny? Or do you think, you know, like you'd be like, you tell kids like you could be anything you want to be. Go ahead and make a highlight reel of yourself. You know what I mean? Just thinking like, get out of here, kid. Or do you think he really was like, nah, like you've got talent. Like you could do this.
I mean, here's the thing. Whether he thought it or not,
he said it.
He said it. Like he said that, I think you're funny and you can do this. And sometimes like our words have that much power in people's lives. Like even if the guy was just talking smack, like Byron Allen believed it and he went out and became funny.
I think what I love about that is that exact point, whether he meant it or not, like whether he was just brushing this kid off or like he really saw something or not, you have to have something in you that pushes you to execute, that pushes you to do what someone else tells you that you should do. When you find out like, oh, that's something I can do, that you move forward, you have to believe in yourself enough to do something like that. And to me, that's the beginning of a lot of people's story or misstep, is that somebody's told you what to do already.
Yeah.
Now you don't believe it for yourself. You don't believe you're capable. You don't believe you're qualified. You don't believe you're ready. And let me just be clear. There's no such thing as ready. That's a, that's a falsehood that does not exist. And you just haven't gone out and done it, no matter how big or small.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that's probably one of the biggest things that separates the successful from the not successful, that separates like the fulfilled from the not fulfilled. And I don't want to say like the billionaires from the whatever, because you don't need $1 billion to be successful or to have a full and fulfilled life. But I definitely think that's probably one of those really, really key things that separates the happy and successful from those who are not.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, so he was told that he should try comedy. He tried it. He was good at it enough that J.J. Evans himself said, hey, why don't you come and write for me? And some of and some of Jimmy Walker's writers at the time, it was Jay Leno and Dave Letterman were actually writing jokes for Jimmy Walker. So Jimmy Walker was a big comedian at that time. And fast forward, he got a chance to go on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And at age 18, he was the youngest comedian ever to perform on the show. So he must have been funny enough. He must have been funny enough. And after, you know, going on The Tonight Show, he then gets cast for a number of different TV opportunities. And then eventually he pivoted, because for him, this was a chance to learn about the business of entertainment and comedy. But by the 90s, he wanted his own ownership stake in the business and he started his own company in 1993. And I'll tell you, when he started out in business, it didn't go so well. In the
bleak. Yeah. Right. Like it wasn't like he was just continuously climbing this ladder. For a lot of us, you start to do well in a thing and you feel confident and empowered and you've got enough resources to take the next step and you trip.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, when's the last time you tripped going up the steps, Alan? Like in real life, like physically.
No comment. Okay.
Everybody's trip going up the steps is all I'm saying. Right. And it happens physically and proverbially. You are going to trip. Going up the steps, especially if you're going too fast.
Yeah. So he started out in a way that is, today they would call it lean. You ever hear this concept of the lean startup? And I'm all about the lean startup. The lean startup is really like, let me take what I have right now and let me try to build something with it, right? And so what he had was access to celebrities, right? And so what he started to do was create his own TV show where he would interview those celebrities. Now, he didn't have a big TV studio to do it. So he would wait until these celebrities were on their press junkets. That's when they're promoting their films or doing press conferences. And he'd say, look, let me just slide you over here to the side. Okay. Let me interview you for a little bit. And that was his TV show. He didn't have to invest in a whole movie studio. He didn't need a big producer, a whole budget. And that's how he got started producing his own content.
I love that. Right. And honestly, that's really prevalent today in the world of TikTok and Instagram and social media. It's a lot of lean startups, right? Like it's an iPhone, some sort of smartphone and a software download, and people are creating their own content and it's really, really taking off and people are becoming media moguls, actors, actresses, musicians, a variety of things. So Byron Allen was like the original influencer.
Listen. Man, it's Black History Month. We can learn from this Black man.
Right. And we've got a lot more to learn. This story is going to get very, very, very interesting. We got to figure out how do we get to the $1 billion part? So stick with us. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors. So we are back.
Yes.
It's Black History Month, and we are talking about Byron Allen. Why should white guys have all the fun?
Brothers want to have some fun.
Facts.
Sisters want to have some fun.
We already having fun. I don't know what y'all are thinking. You see what I'm saying? We're having a great time out here.
We want to do a $1 billion deal, too.
And it's been done.
Yeah, facts. And they will happen again. And we got to believe we can do it. So before the break, we were just telling the story of how Byron Allen got started. So we started out producing his own TV show, and it really wasn't a big budget show. He would basically go to his friends who were on movie sets and say, hey, you're promoting the movie. Let me, you know, pull you off to this corner and let me videotape you on this interview. And then what he did was he created a kind of a barter model with the studios, the TV studios. So he basically said, look, I'll give you this show for free, but why don't you give me a cut of those advertising dollars when the dollars come in? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like at the time, that's not how TV was done. Like at the time, like you came up with a show and you sold it to the network and you got a check. Like he said, look, I have the content and I'm willing to bet on myself that I'll be able to profit from those advertising sales. And so he flipped it a little bit differently.
And so what that means is he was willing to not take a check up front.
Lord.
Right. So many times people are like, I'm ready to get paid. I'm ready to get broke off. For him, he was like, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than an upfront check. I was watching a video today that has resonated with me so, so much. And someone was interviewing a millionaire, just asking him how he became a millionaire and asked him for advice. And the advice that he gave is that the most expensive thing out, the most expensive thing available to all of us is now.
Break that down.
It's the warning now. It's the warning of something right now. It could cost you versus just working towards it, just holding off, just, you know, putting more effort towards it. It's the now that is very expensive for people, right? You're running up your credit because you need something. You want something now.
Lord.
You're missing out on royalties or greater opportunities because you want something right now. You can't invest. You won't invest because you won't put the time in that's necessary for compound interest because what if I need my money right now? The most expensive thing out there is now.
That's
and what Byron Allen did, he understood that early on. And he said, listen, I'm not looking for a check right now. This is bigger than that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know we're giving this guy a lot of credit. I bet he tried to sell the show. they're probably like, nah, bro. Like, I don't even mess with this show.
Right. So he was like, all right,
fine.
Just put it on. Just, and if you make a little money, just give me some. That's it. Just put it on air. Right.
Yeah. So versus none of us were there. He could have quit. Like a lot of us would have probably quit. Like, they ain't buy it. So that's it.
Yes. So he was like, listen, I already made it. This is what really happened for real.
Okay.
When he was creating the content, he already told his friends, I'm about to put you on. He gassed it.
Okay.
Right. And so they doing the videos, they in the, you know, in the break room or whatever, in their green room, like, you know, my man, this about to, when it's going to air, I'm going to let you know. It's going to be a schedule.
Right,
it's going to be an airing schedule. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you know what time and all that, you know, you have a little viewing party and all that, but he ain't had nowhere to show it. Like he couldn't embarrass himself by not showing this content that he's created and he's got a microphone in their face and all of that. So he was like, just don't embarrass me. Just put it on. And if y'all make a little bit of money, can I have some?
Yeah. That's so funny. And, like he would have been more embarrassed to not have it on. So he's like, look, just put it on. And they probably aired it at 2 a.m. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. They probably aired it at 2 a.m.
He's like, did you catch it?
Yeah. Right. And the dude was like, oh no, I was busy. He didn't tell you what time it came on. He just said it was on.
Right.
So the business model was not very successful in the beginning. Right. This is the part that I love the most about his story. He was facing multiple foreclosures on his home.
He even lost
his phone service. His phone got cut off. My man was then conducting business from a payphone.
I'm sorry. Multiple foreclosures on your home.
Like they're trying to foreclose. I come up with the money to stop it.
They run it back. They spend a block on
later,
me.
You see what I'm saying? They're trying to foreclose again.
So they know my man by name at this point. Byron.
Yeah.
I thought you said last week, we wasn't going to do this again.
Multiple. What's funny, one of our younger employees, he was born in 2000. He doesn't understand the concept of a payphone or beepers, how that stuff used to work. I was breaking it down to him and he thought this was hilarious that we used to actually have a quarter in our pocket or a dime for some who are older and walk up to this thing called a payphone that was dirty and grimy and in some cases had a phone book dangling from it. and you would make phone calls, or you could even give out the number and people could call you on the payphone.
It wasn't all that grimy, okay? It wasn't all that grimy.
How do you think about it? Like, would you put your ear and mouth on something in the public right now?
Not post-COVID. But prior to COVID, it wasn't that bad. Okay,
fine.
It wasn't horrible.
Yeah, but my man's like running a company on a payphone in Hollywood.
Now, I do remember hearing him tell the story about how he was managing these foreclosures. And he was saying like how he got cool with the bank and they would tell him like, all right, Byron, you got 43 or 47 days before like it's not reversible anymore. And so he would be like, thanks. And he will always show up on like the 46th day just to make sure like he was able to get it back enough so that they could start the clock again.
Yeah.
Right. But what that tells me is that he believes in this. Right. Now, I'm sure. And again, we're not praising this man. We don't know what he was going through. I'm sure he had a couple of homies, maybe some chicks he was dating. I don't know if he was married at the time, who was like, you know what? You ain't got your together. Like you running behind. You can't pay your bills. Mm. Like you got this pipe dream. I'm not doing this. Like you need to go ahead and get a job. You need to stop. You need to go back to doing stand up or you need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a choice that you have to make. Like for a lot of y'all, some of y'all do need to go back. Some of y'all do need to go back to work. If you're still rapping, right? And like
at 43,
47, handing out like mixtapes. I don't know. I don't think it's time.
We also know though, Tiffany, come on, keep it real. Like you've read about certain actors like Morgan Freeman who didn't really get his big break until his 40s.
I'm talking about rapping. I'm specifically talking
about mixtape. Go ahead and sell that mixtape.
Yeah, sell it, but don't quit your job is all I'm saying.
Fine.
And I'm specifically talking about rapping. And they say a lot of these actors were waiting tables. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But you have to say like it is a personal decision and it's something that like it isn't right for everybody. You got to gauge if you really believe in yourself, if you're really willing to make the sacrifice. And if you are, then you got to go all in. You got to be like, I guess like Byron Allen. And if you aren't, you got to think about it. And what happens is not that you give up on your dream, but you might have to pivot. And I bring that up because I think Byron Allen does a lot of pivoting throughout his career.
That's a fact. And in the vein of rap songs that you just mentioned, there's a song that goes, Look at Me Now.
Oh my God.
Can we look at him now? Can we now? We went through the hustling from the payphone. Let's talk about where he is now. I want to just brag on this black man for just a moment. And again, you may not agree with his politics. You may not, agree with his choice in spouse. You may not agree with how he represents himself, but this is an African-American man who is doing it big. So Byron Allen today has a net worth of $735
million.
Mm. $735 million.
But how you making billion-dollar deals with a net worth of $735 million?
You got to know how to do it.
There you go.
You got to know how to do it.
You got to know how to do it.
How to slice it up.
It's about the numbers, but it's also about your reputation, and it's about what you can accomplish. And if people believe that you can accomplish something, they're not worked up or they're not caught up on how much you are worth right now.
Man, hey, listen, Tiffany, like, keep it real. Like, you my business partner. Like, how many things have we bought that cost millions of dollars and we ain't have millions of dollars to buy it with and we made it happen?
And we'd be really, like, negotiating these deals, like, the money's in it. Like, we got it.
Yeah, and then we figure it out.
Every time.
And they get their money and we get the company. And, he figured out how to get it done. So he has two companies. One company is Allen Media Group. The other one is called Entertainment Studios. Entertainment Studios to me is just an hilarious name because it's like so basic and vague. Entertainment Studios, my guy, like it's like Acme. Acme for me.
Right, so, all the cartoons.
But his companies are worth over $4.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Like, so look at me now, okay? His companies have 27 different TV stations. They're in 21 different markets. He has 12 different cable networks. He has over 300 million subscribers. Like, there's only 300 million people in America. Mm. So he's clearly global with his company.
Can we talk about some of the networks? Y'all are like, well, he owns Tubi. No, not Tubi. Okay. Yeah.
Now, a lot of these you never heard of, but one of them you definitely have.
He owns the Weather Channel.
Come on, son.
Come on now. How long has the Weather Channel been around?
Come on.
The Weather Channel.
Everybody knows the Weather Channel. You never even thought somebody owns that and is caking off that.
And here I was gonna say that's the lesson alone. Y'all be looking for the sexiest stuff. I need to create. I need to create a Netflix.
You see what I'm saying?
No, I'm gonna just keep the weather going.
On the weather, because you know it's always gonna be weather.
Facts.
And you know they want to know.
Listen, you don't even need. I'm sure these anchors, these weathermen, ain't asking for a ton of money.
You see what I'm saying?
Right. You need a Doppler 3000.
That's it. That only costs about 3000.
Right. And a screen. Right? Like, that's probably all AI at this point. The weather telling itself.
Yeah. And you don't even got to be right. You'd be like, oh, new day. Let's talk about what's happening tomorrow. Right. It's just like the people on CNBC. They ain't got to be right either.
No, but it's the thing that, like, people always think it's got to be something super cool and super fly and super innovative. He owns the Weather Channel. One thing I know about the Weather Channel, they keep them ads going.
You see what I'm saying?
There's all ton of commercials on the Weather Channel.
Yeah. Yo, I ain't gonna lie. I don't watch the Weather Channel.
Shoot.
I'm just gonna look at my phone and see what it says and then take my chances. Okay.
But take your chances.
I will tell you, like, my parents are always watching the daggone Weather Channel.
My parents
will sometimes call me like, hey, are you okay? Like,
they ain't even
like
going
be traveling.
Out. And they're watching the Weather Channel.
Yeah, like I'll be traveling and they'll be like, oh my God, there's a hurricane in Ohio. I'm like, yo, I'm in Florida. Like, what are we talking about? But he owns a lot of these properties that you've either never heard of or you've probably seen and haven't really given it a whole lot of thought. Even some of his TV shows, like he's got Judge Maybelline. My man's caking off Judge Maybelline. But the funny story about how he got into the court TV business is that there was another big studio that was doing a court show. And they decided at the last minute to pull the plug, but they had already spent $500,000 building the set. And so he had gotten word that this was going on. And he knew from being in business that if that studio spent $500K building that set, they're probably going to spend another $100K trying to dismantle it and throw it in the garbage. Mm-hmm. So he called that movie studio and said, hey, how about I give you $1?
Come on. You
give me that set. And at first they laughed, and then they did the math in their heads and they were like, you know what? You got yourself a deal.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
You see what I'm saying? Yep. That's it. So what I'm saying is, like, he's able to get a lot of different shows. Like, he's got shows like America's Court with Judge Ross. Have you watched Judge Ross?
No.
Okay. He's got Entertainers with Byron Allen. That was his interview show.
Okay.
Have you seen that?
Probably not. I mean, I definitely have seen Justice with Judge Maybelline.
Okay,
I know Judge
Maybelline.
You've
seen that. That's,
for sure.
That's his big show. Funny You Should Ask. That's one of his big shows. Have you seen Funny You Should Ask? No. But I'm saying my man is selling these shows to all of these different networks. And the thing he's kind of known for, his brand is like family-based stuff. Like you probably like to watch rated R stuff, Tiffany. So you're not checking for the family-based programming. He owns thegrio.com.
Okay. That?
Yeah.
Very familiar.
Mm-hmm. He didn't start it. Like, he bought it, you know, probably when it was starting to go down a little bit. He bought the Black News Channel. You didn't know that. Remember there used to be that Black News Channel?
You've been on there a couple times.
Yes, I have.
But you was working for Byron Allen?
No, well, he bought it after it kind of was going down. So I haven't really seen it a ton since then.
Yeah. You were on, like, in the last, like, 3 years. You've been on the Black News.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, he owns it now. So basically, yes. Basically, that's my boy for sure.
my God.
He's also got, you know, his entertainment company's made a few movies. I bet you haven't seen these movies, but he's made some money. Okay. 47 Meters Down.
Oh, you mean the shark thriller?
Oh, you've seen that?
First of all, I'm looking at the notes. No, I don't watch no movie about no sharks.
So in 2017, this was the highest grossing independent movie of the year. It grossed over $62 million on a $5 million budget. Through 47 Meters. Come through Shark Thriller.
I think it was like you said, this is international. I think it became like a really big deal, like in Mexico or something. Like, I know.
Yeah, China.
In these places.
Like, yeah. He did the sequel.
Uh-oh.
47 Meters Down Uncaged. And that thing did $48 million on a $12 million budget. So these two films have done $100+ million.
Not, first of all. So it went from 47 Meters Down to to 47 meters down uncaged. Y'all didn't let the shark out the cage. Y'all didn't listen the first time and y'all let the shark out the cage.
So my man's doing it. He's had a bunch of successful deals. Now, here's one thing that kind of, like, honestly, it pissed me off. So on one hand, I'm seeing the Wall Street Journal bigging him up, talking about this deal that he's doing. Then I start preparing for the show and I start Googling him on CNBC. And this is the thing that kind of got me. CNBC has this big article and the title is Byron Allen has a long history of media bids that have not materialized. And they then put up all of his failures. Like, you see how they do us? Yeah. Like, we just talked about a black man who went from literally about to lose his home, doing business on a payphone, to now being worth almost $1 billion, owning the weather itself, right? And the only thing that y'all could talk about is deals that he tried to get into that failed. And they didn't fail because he didn't have the money. They mostly failed because the people didn't want to sell it to him, or because the government got involved and said, nah, you can't buy that. You're too powerful.
Right. But what that speaks to, right, is the narrative that's always pushed. If someone were to push the narrative like this, oh my God, this black man just keeps trying to do all these deals and 95% of them didn't work. They don't talk about the 5%. They don't talk about Uncaged. Okay. They don't tell you about Uncaged.
They don't talk about Maybelline.
Okay.
They don't talk about
Judge
the weather.
Right. All the ones that did work out to bring him to being close to a billionaire. You don't talk about all of that. Like, there's a whole lot to everybody's story. I think so many times people feel like, yo, my joint has not worked out. Like, my stuff has not worked out. I'm telling you, like, it's not going to work out until it does.
Word.
And when it does, all the other stuff was experience. All that other stuff was just lessons learned. No one's going to be tripping about what didn't work out once it starts to work out. And so, yes, both happen. In every success story, both things happen. Things don't work out and things do work out.
Yeah, that's a fact. So one of the things they talked about that didn't work out was that he was trying to buy the Denver Broncos, making him the first black owner in the NFL.
Majority black owner.
Now, the reason it didn't work out is one of the children of the Walmart family, who happened to have a lot more money, they outbid him. Like, right. It wasn't because he didn't have the money. He made a multi-billion dollar bid for this team. He had the financing lined up and somebody just had more money than him. Right. And by the way, when somebody overpays, he might have a chance to circle a block and buy it later. Because even with this deal for Paramount, he tried to buy Paramount a year prior for $18 billion. And then Paramount said no. Their stock has dropped by 40%. And now he's coming back and saying, look, I'll buy it for $14. Like, yesterday's price ain't today's price.
Facts.
By the way, he tried to buy BET. They said, nah. Now he's like, you know what? I'll buy the whole company. How about that? Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, like, you got to be persistent. You're not going to get every deal, but you got to stick with it. And I'm, like, super proud that he's able to make this bid.
Yeah. And we've learned from that, from, like, watching other people overpay for something and then just kind of sit around like, okay, you got it. We don't think it's worth that. Like, we don't think we're going to make a strong return at that price. And then stepping back and they spin the block and then you get it for even lower, right? That's just a part of negotiating. And that's a part of being patient. And that's a part of not focusing so much on now. We've got more to talk about in our conversation around, like, listen, why should white guys have all the fun?
You see what I'm saying?
I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Thank you so much for listening to the Momentum Advisors Show. This is Sean King, founder and CEO of the North Star. If you want to hear more shows like this, featuring black and brown voices on the most important issues of the day, head over right now to thenorthstar.com. To discover all the podcasts we have to offer, we have over 500 different episodes from 6 different podcast series, and they're all great. Check them out. Momentum.
So we're back?
Yes.
Still talking about Byron Allen. And not necessarily because he's like the GOAT. But I mean, he could be a sheep. Like, he's definitely, you know, up there. And for us, it's Black History Month. And so we are just talking about Black excellence.
That's
Black excellence isn't flawlessness either. Like, word. I want us to be clear about that. Like, it's not that we subscribe to everything that he's doing. It's not that he's even done everything right. But excellence is excellence. And these are the stories that I don't feel like, that we feel like are not being shared in a way mm-hmm. where we feel compelled or empowered
yeah.
to define our own stories.
That's a fact. And again, just like we talked about my man, Reginald Lewis, you know, he was doing billion-dollar deals as a Black man at a time when we weren't doing that. And now, years later, you've got Byron Allen out here doing billion-dollar deals. Like, we can draw inspiration from a lot of different people. And as Black people, especially during Black History Month, we've got to be able to find some new heroes, some new people to be proud of, to just make us proud of ourselves.
So with that said, like, what lessons can we learn? I think we've talked about a couple of lessons, right? But there's more that we can really learn from Byron Allen and others like Byron Allen, all right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not, and this is not taking anything away from him, Byron Allen isn't so special or isn't so talented, and that's why all of this worked out for him, right? There's some things that he did that all of us can do, and I guarantee it's going to work out in time, as long as yeah. we get out of the now, right? So facts. One lesson is, how you start is not how you finish.
Lord.
How many jokes do you think they were telling about this man at the bank with the foreclosures?
Lord.
Every time he walked in there, they was like, oh my God, here yeah. he come.
I bet you somebody called him Brokey what? Allen at one point.
Listen, that's the nicest thing they could have called him.
Yeah.
For sure. I'm sure they didn't let him get no free lollipops. I'm sure they didn't let him get no free pens. They're like, listen, you've been in here enough. Security guard is probably like, oh my yeah. God. Like, yeah, we about to close.
Dating, can you imagine dating this guy?
That's what
that
I brought
time?
Up earlier. No, I can't. No, I can't. No, I cannot.
Blocking your blessing.
I can't imagine
so,
it.
So, ladies, anybody out there dating a no, man who's going through still, a foreclosure right now, stick with him, okay?
Uh-uh. No, here's the thing. I'm not saying don't. I'm saying, if here's the thing, okay? You got to, is it the
like,
first
no matter
foreclosure?
What his circumstances,
not, no, not okay? don't ask what I'm saying. Is it the first foreclosure? Is it the third one? And at the time, here's the thing. I'm not saying he's not like a wonderful man. He don't got no business dating right now. He can't afford dates and accommodations. He can't, right? So he would be irresponsible to even be trying to date you right now.
But at the same time, he's looking for his rider.
No, you can't yeah. be looking for a rider.
Yes, you
can.
You're always looking for a rider, okay?
that's right? irresponsible. So if you meet somebody who's going through some foreclosures, I would pay for dinner.
Good.
And I would just be motivational via text.
So crazy.
What's up, Byron? Yeah. So you good?
Oh my God. So on
keep
that
your head
point,
up.
On that point, like, my man went from literally being on stage to owning
ashy
the stage.
Ashy to classy.
Yeah. Like,
okay.
He now, like, you know how powerful it is in the media world to have your own station, your own production company, your own movie studio. Like, you've got the power to really push content. Like, he's trying to buy BET. I don't know what his goals are besides the financial goals. But like, when we own stuff like that, like, it's there's power in that.
Can I be honest about something?
Please do.
I think if I own a weather channel.
Okay.
I think.
You'll stop showing the weather?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes. Sometimes I'm going to put on what I want to put on. I really feel that way. And honestly, and I would change, like, you know, the Weather Channel, it's like background music sometimes when yeah. it's like every 15 minutes, they show like the local or recent weather. And yeah. so like, I would definitely mix up the background music for sure.
Okay.
Like, what? He's the snowman. How am I not going to play Jeezy the snowman? Like, come on. All songs about making it rain.
Yeah.
Are in there. So Lil Wayne's.
What about
there.
It's getting hot in here?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So this would be the first
weather channel.
It's the first weather channel with a whole music department.
You see, Timmy's right? going to plummet the company.
On again, Black History Month, we're changing the colors.
Okay. And what are you doing to Judge Maybelline?
Nah, she's fine. Her show's fine. Just saying, like, the Weather Channel is going to be different. It's going to be, yeah. you know, like with Google, like when it's a certain day, they switch it up and the header's a little bit different. So, or like Waze. With Waze, okay. you can switch the voices up.
Yeah, like put
bet
T-Pain
money,
on there.
Martin Luther King is definitely doing the weather on his birthday.
I had a dream that the weather was going to be clear
tomorrow.
Oh
my God. It's going to be with AI. That's nothing. It's nothing.
Yo, you are a fool.
It'd be the best Weather Channel, hands down. Yeah. We would make more money. It'd be more advertisers.
Yeah. And on that note, the second thing we can learn from him is that success takes time. Like my man, you know, he had to really reinvent himself. Like that is not an overnight thing. Like there's a lot of folks out here right now
100%.
Who may have a dream that's very different than what they're doing right now. And they're not willing to put in the time and effort it's going to take to make that transition. Like it can work out for you.
Recently, I reached out to a high school friend of mine who had went through a difficult period in time. And while he was going through that difficult period of trying to like reinvent himself, literally he was reinventing himself. He was going from like acting and entertainment to trying to figure out like what his next step was. And he was really, really down and out and trying to learn an entirely new thing. And I remember us talking and I remember giving him advice just generally. Right. And he went and took that advice and learned something new and like is doing extremely well. Right. And he's doing extremely well in an area that I'm becoming interested in. So I hit him up literally on Instagram about something about something he posted. He posted actually a picture of him and another one of my high school friends at a dispensary. And I was like, yo, does he own that dispensary? He was like, yeah, he just opened this dispensary with partners from a restaurant he used to work security at.
Okay, I got that.
So my homeboy is telling me that the other guy in the picture who we went to high school with, a friend from high school, just opened a dispensary and he got the owners, this guy used to work security at a restaurant.
Wow.
And he got the owners of that restaurant to partner with him to open his dispensary.
I love it.
Right? So that's not even a story. So I'm like, oh, that's great. And he was like, isn't it great to see all of us doing well, all of us figuring it out? And I said, it is. It's so good. And he was like, Tiff, I never forget what you told me. You told me that there's no timeline on something that you really want to do. And I was like, damn, I said that? But it resonated with me because I needed to be reminded of that right now. Like, of things that I'm trying to figure out. He was like, yeah, there's no timeline on something that you're trying to do. Meaning, it's no point. If you really want to do it, you're not counting time. You're not clocking time. And so you got to be patient. And you really just got to listen. There's no, because you're never going to say 10 years from now, I can't believe I wasted 10 years getting to exactly where I wanted to be.
It's a great story. I also like that, you know, your friend made that investment in relationship to the point where he did a good job in his role. He got that person to respect him enough that he can make that ask. Like a lot of times people ask for stuff that they don't really deserve or qualify to ask for. Like I'm not saying don't ask, but I'm saying like you should try to work up your reputation with that person to the point where people are willing to do things like invest with you. So I love that. I love that. The next thing I would say that I know I learned from him is really just to aim big and don't quit. I know it sounds like really small stuff, but like, you know, when I think about, you know, it's crazy just thinking about, you know, how far I've come in my career and how far you've come, Tiffany, in your career, how far we've come as entrepreneurs. Like a lot of the stuff we're doing, like we don't necessarily qualify for. It's not predictable. Like it's not like, oh, I could see you owning 9 dry cleaners, a gym, a wealth management business, an insurance company. You know what I'm saying? But we did it. And I don't think you do it by aiming small. You know what I'm saying? I think you do it by really having a deep belief in yourself and being audacious enough to basically say to the world, like, look, I can do this. It's not this type of success is not reserved just for the old white man.
I agree. Another piece of advice is not even sometimes, you have to always humble yourself.
Yeah.
Like you can't walk around with a chip on your shoulder. You can't be unwilling to ask. You can't be unwilling to self-promote. Like Byron Allen was doing business from a payphone at one point, right? Like I'm sure he wasn't walking around with any chains. He wasn't driving in any fancy car, but like you have to understand that you really might have to start from the bottom. And even if you don't have to start from the bottom, there's going to be plenty of times you are going to have to humble yourself. Humility is going to get you very, very far. And so because of social media, because of the perception of overnight success, people feel like, yo, once I get the EIN number, once I get my LLC, I'm on. Like, no, it doesn't work like that. And so you've got to be willing to do anything for your company. You got to be the person willing to make the calls, write the emails, write the letters, fill out the paperwork, you know, all of that. Nothing is beneath you. You don't need to now go out and get an assistant because I don't have time to be calling all these people. I don't have time to do door knocking and everything else. Like, you've got to be humble enough to start at the bottom. And it makes me think about, like, with you and I, we are, you know, partners in a variety of different companies. People are shocked when they hear that we went to dry cleaning school. Like, we didn't just find some money, build a dry cleaner, hire a staff.
No. And by the way, if you've ever seen Tiffany in person, she stays decked out in 9-inch heels.
Oh, my gosh.
Big earrings, like dresses. Like,
I wore my earrings through dry cleaning school.
You ain't wearing them 9-inch heels.
I did not. Because we had a uniform. We had to wear a uniform every day. You know how hard it was?
You know what's so crazy? Like, since dry cleaning school, I don't believe you've ever worn a uniform ever again.
And
like, I wear mine all the time.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, you do. That's because you're still enslaved in your mind. But I'm not.
Oh, my God.
I'm my own person. I can do what I want to do. But we went to dry cleaning school. We had to wear a uniform every day, and we had to clean strangers' dirty clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to own
register.
One.
Yeah.
I'm not. No, the cash register wasn't the problem. It's the pants that were the problem. It was the pants. You know what comes out of people's pants?
And the crotches and all that. Like,
listen.
Yeah, we had to be in there grinding, getting
those
stains out.
We were still Momentum Advisors.
Word.
Okay.
Yeah, managing millions of dollars.
And managing Lord. Crotches.
Humble yourself. Humble yourself. Like, listen, Jesus washed feet. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he went on to die for our sins, that we might have a chance at everlasting life. You can get down there and clean some crotches from time to time.
From time to time.
And the final thing I'll say is that there's more than one way to be successful in business.
I
think about people wanting to get into the entertainment industry, like, they want to make things that they might want to see. Okay, I can see that. But there's somebody out there making a profit off things that are corny, but everybody needs, like the weather. Or court TV shows, or like something has to air at 2 o'clock in the morning. And maybe you could corner the market on that type of programming.
Listen, to your point, there's so many types of business out here. It doesn't have to be groundbreaking. It doesn't have to be innovative. I think about today, right? I think about who was the woman who looked another woman in the face and said, "You ain't got enough eyelashes. You know? You don't have enough eyelashes." It's too many women out here with thin eyelashes.
This is a Black History moment, perhaps.
It is. It is. And now you can't go nowhere without seeing women with fake eyelashes. Women not even willing to leave their house without extra eyelashes on.
Including you.
No, I tried it. I ain't gonna hold you. I tried it. I tried it twice.
You didn't. The issue is you didn't go big enough.
No, the issue is I got contacts. It's hard to get the contacts past the eyelashes.
Mm.
And then if your real lash falls out, while you got like falls into your eye, a fake lash though? No, it's too much. So it's fine. My eyelashes, listen, it's fine. They're thin. I don't have a problem with that. But
you
what I'm
be
saying,
willing to sacrifice.
You
got to
be willing to, okay, right? Somebody was like, yes, her hair done, her makeup done. She's straight. She don't need anything. Ah, you look at her eyelashes. A little wispy. It's a little wispy.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do it. There's a lot of ways. I read an article recently about a guy that started a company as a white guy, but just, you know, innovative. Like, the company's called Owner. And he basically just does back office software for restaurant owners so that they can make a bigger profit on their delivery than using DoorDash or Uber Eats.
I love that.
Yeah, like there's a lot of ways to make money. That's the point. Like, you don't have to do it the cool way. There's not just one way to do it. It doesn't have to be that innovative, but, you know, again, if you believe in yourself, if you see an opportunity, you just got to go for it.
And if you're consistent, one thing that all business requires is consistency.
Facts.
Whether you can offer a consistent service or you can provide a product that works consistently.
Yeah.
And the weather is consistent, damn it.
It's the weather, so, man.
Not it being right. No. The weather.
Oh, just
consistent.
That there is weather.
It's just weather.
Yeah,
and every
true.
Day, like, somebody wants to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't, like you said, doesn't even matter if it's right.
On that note, my man even invented the weather in Spanish, like a weather.com. Like,
not
like
he
literally.
Invented
no,
the
he
weather
did. Like, no,
I'm
the
pretty sure.
No, like how they got ESPN Deportes, like he invented the weather
Deportes.
Yeah. Like, he made a whole new channel of it. So
I'm sure Spanish speaking people are forever grateful that they now
never knew what the weather was going to be.
Oh my god!
Before him, okay. I'm gonna just leave it there.
Cross cultural.
He's Christopher Columbus of weather.
Of the weather. There we okay. We could drop the mic right there.
Now, a big shout. Hopefully, you guys learned. You know, listen, we always have fun, but it's Black History Month, and the theme of this whole month. I mean, we're gonna go through a lot of different lessons this month. But the theme is that white folks ain't the only ones that could do stuff. Like, they're not the only ones who can own stuff, do billion-dollar deals. Like, you could do it, too.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's really what it's about, is that you can do it, too. Whether it's other people doing it as well, you can do it, too. And we're going to continue to reinforce that in every way as we help you build wealth. So we'll be back next week. It'll still be Black History Month. I'm Tiffany Hawkins.
I'm Alan Boomer.
And we're the Momentum Advisors. Mommy, time.